Hey, everybody, and welcome to Today's News Tonight, the weeknight news show where we're joined by special guests and our lovely patrons to discuss the day's gaming news. I'm your host, Ash Paulson, and I'm joined, as always, by my wonderful friends and GVG co-founders, Steve Bowling and Derek Bittner, along with our very, very special guest, MVG. MVG, man, how's it going? Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me on, gents. It's great to be here. Big fan of the show, and I watched the show, and it's an honor to be on with you guys tonight. Thank you.
Well, we're just happy to have you here, and though we do not have a sponsor for today's episode, Steve has a little shout-out that he would like to do for this slot right here, so I'm going to throw it right over to you, Steve.
Yeah, as y'all have noticed in the chat already, I'm in a completely different location. I'm actually coming to you live from Washington State. For those of you that know, that's where my family lives. And thankfully, a local store, Ted Brown Music, was kind enough to supply me with a microphone camera setup to be able to participate in the show without lugging all my gear with me across state lines. So a huge thanks to Ted Brown Music for supplying the required equipment for tonight's episode. I will have a link to their website down in the description below after the show is over for you to check out. And yeah, I will be doing some content with my mom since I'm here for Mother's Day.
Awesome. Nice. And I also want to throw out an extra special thank you to our just incredible ally and friend, Brandon Miracle, for running the stream in Steve's stead. Obviously, we're running a bit late today. We really apologize for being late. We're still getting used to our new live public format. So thank you all for being so patient. And thank you, Brandon, for running the stream in Steve's stead and just, you know, helping make this all happen. So just thank yous all around.
Everyone heard the countdown going in. I didn't think about that.
Oh, nice.
So
whatever. Hey, you're a voice of God for a reason, right?
Yes, so, I am.
All good. Okay, well, we do have some news to get through today, but before we do that, we have a couple of things to talk about, kind of to intro us into the show. First of all, MVG, you just completed work on the recently released Switch port of the original Shantae, and we just kind of wanted to talk to you about that a little bit and just kind of pick your brain a bit on the development experience. First of all, I just want to say I spent a couple hours playing it last night, and you killed it, man. You did a great job. I played the original Shantae. It feels incredibly authentic to the original. I love that the GBA enhancements are here as well. So hats off to you, man. You did a great job.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate the kind words. It's getting a lot of really positive and good vibes, good feedback from everyone that's picked up the game. So it's great to hear that you're having a good experience with it as well. So that's awesome to hear.
Absolutely. Did you encounter any specific challenges during the development of this port?
Not really. I mean, I think, you know, it's a project that has actually been in the works probably a little longer than you think. I mean, when you think about a game that is, you know, a retro throwback, you know, you tend to think it may have a shorter development cycle, but we started the game probably towards the end of 2019. So obviously, you know, with COVID and everything in the mix, that does have an impact on even small game development. It impacted us in some ways, but I think, generally speaking, it was a pretty smooth dev cycle and getting the game, you know, through QA and all that stuff. But look, I think, you know, for me, just getting kind of Matt Bozon's seal of approval was the big thing. You know, once he saw the game and once he was excited about it, we knew that we were onto something good. And you know, he was very, very pleased with the final result. So I think all said and done, you know, it was a great release by both Way Forward and Limited Run, that was a company that, you know, we developed the game for.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I played the original Shantae when it was released on 3DS Virtual Console.
Yep.
I have not had a chance to pick up this one because even though, like, yeah, it's time for me to have all five Shantae games on one system. That just sounds awesome to have that. What kind of changes, as somebody who's only played that version, can I expect from this new one on the Switch? Because I'll be honest, I didn't even know there were GBA enhancements.
Yeah, so, well, first of all, the Virtual Console version doesn't have the GBA enhancements. So right. The Switch version has two versions of the game. One is kind of the vanilla version, which is essentially the same as the 3DS version on Virtual Console, but the Switch version actually does run a little better. And I'm not just saying that because I coded the game, but... We made sure that we really tightened up things like
the the input delay and stuff like that, and we really tuned in the controls as best we could on the Switch version. So when you play the game, it feels pretty good. It feels tight. You know, it feels like you're playing on original hardware. That's not to say the Virtual Console isn't that. It's still a very fine version of the game, but I think the Switch version, you know, is kind of the definitive port. It also does include the GBA enhanced version of that game as well, which wasn't a part of the Virtual Console release. And of course, you get, you know, the extras, you get, you know, the art book, and Matt Bozon sent some artwork for the game that is in kind of the extras menu as well. So you kind of get a nice package of a pretty cool release, all said and done. So I do think while it's not too different from the Virtual Console version, it's still, you know, its own kind of entity, and it's definitely worth checking out, even if you have played the Virtual Console version, even just to take a look at the GBA enhanced version.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be picking it up at some point here, because I mean, I think I got into it with Risky's Revenge, and it's like, yeah, I'm all down through this. That's why I picked up the Virtual Console version. So I'm definitely excited for it to be on Switch as well. So great to hear. Yeah. It's such a solid port that you put together. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. It was one of those things that, you know, not many opportunities come at you, but when they do, you kind of jump all over it. And this was definitely one of those moments for me where it's like, I didn't really hesitate, you know, when I was asked by Limited Run and Wave Forward if I could, you know, work on this game for them. Even though at the time I was like, well, how am I going to do this? I didn't really know what I was going to do at the start, but that stuff comes later. You know, you take the opportunity when you get them, and you just go with it. And I think everyone's pretty happy with the way it turned out.
Nice. Well, yeah, go ahead, Steve.
I have to say, you know, MVG, I'm a huge fan of your channel, a huge fan of your content. It's kind of surreal, like, talking to you in person, because you're the person that narrates some of my favorite videos, and hearing that same voice, like, casually in conversation, I'm like, that is very interesting. But I remember, and I wish I had the time to look it up, but as y'all know, I came in very hot today. I remember in one of your previous videos, you were talking about how you had touched up like a port of another game. You had fixed some issues in another, like, I think it was an Xbox game. I could be misremembering. And I was like, man, MVG should absolutely be doing this. Were you already involved with Shantae back then, or?
No, but you brought up a good point. So the game that you're thinking of was, it's called Freefall 3050 AD. Yes. And it actually came out on the Nuon, if you guys remember the Nuon system. You probably don't, but it was one of like seven games that released for the Nuon. And the developer of that game actually had an OG Xbox version ready to go. And they were going to bring it out for the original Xbox, like in 2003, 2004 timeframe. But something ended up happening and they never released the game for whatever reason. I don't remember what the reason was. And I reached out to the dev and said, I'd be happy to finish it off for you and release it, you know, as kind of unofficial homebrew. So we did that. But Steve, you brought up a good point, because it was those videos that really got me recognized by Limited Run in the first place, for them to reach out to me and say, we think you're the right guy, because you've obviously got some experience doing this stuff. So, you know, would you be willing to, you know, do you want to work with us? And so it was those videos that actually kind of got me noticed. So, you know, it all kind of worked out in the end.
Nice. That's awesome. And I have to say, as somebody who considers themselves quite technical, I love watching your content, man. Like, every time I see one of your thumbnails and it says mistakes were made, I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be so good. And I mean, you are on like a whole other tier than I am. And I like to consider myself as somebody who understands technology quite a bit, but what you're capable of, I just bow down to, man. It is deeply impressive. I hope someday to be able to reverse engineer stuff and understand things at that level, but it's just not somewhere I'm at yet, for sure.
Well, I definitely appreciate the kind words. And I will say, you know, like one thing about the content that I make is sometimes I go deep, you know, and sometimes I may lose my audience. But most of the time I try to keep it at a level where most people can follow along with, you know. I don't want to get too technical, because I feel like if I do that, people are just going to start clicking off and watching something else. So there is definitely a balance between keeping it entertaining and kind of going really deep and technical. And I think I've, most of the time, I wouldn't say every single time, but most of the time I'm pretty good at, you know, keeping the audience entertained with that stuff.
Nice.
Well, as I said, Derek, you were in for a real treat with this Shantae Switch port. It's certainly keeping me entertained. You did an amazing job. And I do want to touch on, you mentioned the assets that are included in kind of the bonus gallery, showing all the different, you know, the pixel art and yep. and all of Mr. Bozon's, you know, original Shantae line art. And it's great to have this stuff all in one place, because as we all know, especially hardcore Shantae fans, her look has changed a lot over, you know, over the years from game to game and has become, of course, more refined. And that's great, but it's really cool seeing the OG Shantae art kind of collected all in one place here. And you can just see, you know, how far it's come, how different she looks today in games like Shantae and the Seven Sirens compared to her original art style in the first game. So
yeah,
it's just really cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are some Shantae fans out there that may have never played the original game, you know, right. A, because it came out in 2002, and that was a long time ago now, right? Some Shantae fans may not have even been born, you know, when that game was released. The other option is, you know, that game is so rare and hard to find on the original Game Boy Color. It's probably one of the rarest Game Boy Color games because it came out right at the end of the Game Boy Color's life cycle, and we're already into the GBA at that point. So there was only a small print run of those games made. I mean, that game kind of was rare pretty much the moment it had released, almost, because there was so few copies, you know, ever made. So just being able to get that game back, you know, to the fans, and just preserving, you know, not only WayForward's legacy, but just video games in general is cool. And look, I'm always going to put my hand up and say, how can I help with stuff like that? So it's really awesome to see that.
Well, I think Evernight Studio in the chat puts it best when they say, you're really paving the way forward for more retro releases on Switch.
So, wow.
Yeah, nicely done, Evernight Studio. But with that said, before we do have one more thing to talk about before we move on to the news proper. And there's just this little minor tiny court case that's been going on that you may have heard about into gaming at all. And of course, the Apple versus Epic court case continues to rage. We didn't want it to occupy like most of our headlines because there's obviously a lot to talk about. But actually, I've got a tweet from a friend of GVG and former TNT guest Rebecca Valentine here in front of me talking about how it's still a hot, hot court case, very incendiary. She says, wow, Apple's lawyer's still not playing, calling Epic a dishonest business partner for sneaking in that extra payment method that kicked all this off. Quote unquote, let's talk about honesty. You knew you were being dishonest, didn't you? You knew you were acting without integrity?
Apple's going hard because they have an earlier 5 hours ago where the Apple lawyer, she said the Apple lawyer did not come to play, currently grilling Wright about Xbox's policies as a closed system. What about the Epic Game Store? Do you allow the EGS on Xbox? No. Don't you think that's unfair? It's like, jeez.
Yeah.
Like, it is rough. This is definitely a thing. And the sense you get from Reb describing this is that the judge is already just done with both sides. Like, I did not take her long to get sick of gamers.
Well, I mean, considering the court case started with, you know, a bunch of Fortnite kids screaming, save Fortnite, you know, before they even got into the proceedings, I'm not surprised she's already done. I mean, what a mess this has become.
Yeah, you do wonder how much collateral damage is going to come out of this. I feel like there's going to be a lot of stuff, and there's already been a bunch of it. And every single day, it just seems like there's just more and more. Like, I can't even keep up with the stuff that keeps coming out. It's incredible.
One of my favorite takes over this whole case came in yesterday from Stephen Nellis on Twitter, saying Epic's attorney Catherine B. Forrest has handed Epic CEO Tim Sweeney a Nintendo Switch and external controller on the stand to make a point about it not being a general computer, and Sweeney struggles to connect them. He says, as you can see, I'm not a Switch player. Like, come on. I can't believe that you can work so... I mean, I know obviously Sweeney isn't a Switch developer. They do their own thing. I get that. But you know what a Nintendo Switch is, man. Come on. Like, come on. I just can't believe that. That's, yeah.
Well, Sweeney doesn't even have a PS5 at home, apparently. Didn't you say that yesterday? There was some tweet that came out where he said, I don't even have a PlayStation at home or something.
That wouldn't like surprise that. Me. Yeah, yeah, that would not surprise me.
You do wonder, you know, like you work in video games, you work as the CEO there or the top brass, and you do wonder, do you actually play games at home or do you just kind of switch off and do something completely different, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I think about that a lot because I think that it's, you know, there are a few people that we know notably do play games in their off time, like Masahiro Sakurai very clearly plays lots of video games. Miyamoto mentions that he likes to play family games with his children, stuff like that. Oh, well, they're probably grown now, but, you know, but then you have people like Hiroshi Yamauchi, who very famously was like, I don't play video games at all. I don't even like these things. Yeah. yeah, I think it takes all kinds, but I think that a lot of folks at the top level, like the upper echelons of these large game developers or publishers or studios, probably don't. They probably, you know, are immersed in this stuff so much during the day that the last thing you probably want to do is like see a video game. It's like the old, you know, saying, like they say, if you work at like a McDonald's or a Pizza Hut, that is the last food you ever want to eat because you're around it all day. I imagine that there's probably something, a similar effect with video games. I know that when I worked for Konami as a tester, I did not play any of their games when I wasn't working. I was like, I've seen these games all day. I'm done.
Yeah.
I gotta say, the more recent stuff that came out about an hour ago from Reb, if there was ever a hot like signal that these companies really aren't usually your friend, at least the really big ones, they have a document here: PR strategy, hot fix update, goal: get players, media, and industry on Epic's side. 2. Establish a 501c4 organization to advocate on behalf of our policy issues. So we'll work with established providers, partner with Greenbrier to help manage the organization. This will take 1 to 2 months to get started and require 80 to 100,000 to get the coalition initially funded, with an expected life of project cost between 400 and 700,000. Create a broad coalition. We need to fight with our friends. Epic is not sympathetic, but for all of the developers that suffer from these attacks, they are sympathetic. This includes all of our gaming and app partners who are losing out due to unfair platform/pricing practices. So they know they're not a good guy. They know people generally don't go for it, but if they're partnered with the right people, they might go through them. And that's the thing. That's the crazy thing about this. I think there's just so many documents getting aired. So much stuff that like, oh God, this is about the show here. We have to redact this. Like, I believe Xbox's 2021 slate of games was in one of the documents and they had to quickly like black it all out so people couldn't see it. It is crazy. Just the level of secrecy gaming has, and two, just the steps that they will go through in order to keep those secrets. It is kind of crazy.
Well, Eddie B in our Patreon exclusive live audience chat is backing you up, Derek, saying you're right about corporations not being your friends. Nintendo won't accept any of Eddie's friend requests. And there's the proof right there, right?
Obviously,
yeah. So I think it's about time to move on to the news. But just a quick bit of housekeeping. We got a lot of super chats during our first ever live public show on Monday. And we didn't quite know when we were going to read them out. So from now on, if you do donate super chats, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We will read those out between news stories. So I do apologize to those of you who donated on Monday who didn't get your super chat read out. We're still kind of reckoning
that's
with
on
our
me.
New format.
I'm froze up like, do I derail
no, we all
the
did,
conversation
we all did.
Or what do I do?
Yeah.
I was so
yeah. It's all good. So we're sorry about that, but because of the show's nature as a roundtable news show, we are going to read out any super chats we get between topics. And once again, thank you so much for your generous donations and just for being here with us, period. With that said, let's go ahead and move on to our first news story of the day, which came in, thank you, Nintendo, an hour before the show. Thank you for this. And that is that Nintendo has announced a new IP in Game Builder Garage. They released a debut trailer with it, and it's coming out on June 11th. So this looks to be kind of an expanded, more robust version of their Labo Garage idea from the Labo VR kit stuff, which is really, really neat. I like what I'm seeing here. And Brandon, voice of God, I know you love what you were seeing here, man.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think there's so much value here in just being a teaching tool for people who are interested in games. We haven't had something like this really since WarioWare DIY. So I'm glad to see this concept kind of come back.
It's really neat.
I think this is really cool. Like, I always get questions about, how do you get into game dev and what's the path that you chose and everything like that. And I mean, this is one of those tools that you can really pick up from a young age and, sink your teeth into. And I think I'm pretty excited to see stuff like this. I always love when companies bring out, tools that kind of open up the, the audience to building your own games and stuff like that. And based on the trailer, it looks like you can do some pretty interesting stuff with it too. So I'm pretty excited to check it out and jump in and see what's possible with this thing.
Yeah. As an amateur programmer, I am really excited to see what this is capable of. I agree with you, Ash. It reminds me a lot of the Labo Garage, but I'm really happy it's not tied to Labo. I didn't like Labo VR, but I liked that you were able to create stuff in it. I think this is fantastic. I can't wait to try to make something here.
It's interesting you mention that, Steve, because Imran, another previous guest that we've had on the show, tweeted out that they've heard rumblings about this game, and it was always under the codename Labo 05. So apparently this was planned to be Labo, but Labo didn't exactly do the best, so it's like, well, we'll just make it its own thing. And now there's a lot of comparisons between it and, of course, Dreams. One other thing to note that has come out about this is that in order to share your games in Game Builder Garage, you add it to the GBG server, which requires a Nintendo Switch Online, and then it spits out a short alphanumeric code that you can share with others. You can also share your games via local wireless, whence we can actually, interact with each other. So that's just an idea of what the sharing is going to be like and kind of where this whole thing started.
It's very interesting. Oh, go ahead, Steve.
Evernight Studio in the YouTube chat makes an interesting point that I didn't notice in the trailer. Mentions that this is going to have USB mouse support.
Yes.
Which I find to be really interesting. It's definitely preferable to using the Switch's touchscreen.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's interesting what you say about this, I guess, it's initially being designated as ToyCon 05, Derek, because we recently reported on another news story that Nintendo's product page for Labo VR had started redirecting to the general, I think, Nintendo Labo product page or something along those lines.
No, it was Labo's page redirected to just Labo VR.
What it was. Okay, I got it mixed up. That's another sign that maybe they are likely winding down Labo development. And this just seems
I think what could have happened here is just a simple branding issue. I think that Labo became less associated with experimentation, which was probably, given the name, the idea, and more associated with cardboard, which they didn't produce a single non-cardboard set. And I think that probably at some point down the line, Nintendo thought, oh, well, we could do other things, but they just kept releasing cardboard kits. And, I would say as a consumer, if I heard the name Labo, the first thing in my head would be like, okay, it's another cardboard thing.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. Yeah, right. Whereas this is very clearly like a beginner's programming tool. So I think it's wise of Nintendo not to brand this that way, because I think they'd lose potential sales.
It's also worth noting that they're keeping this pretty accessible, because the product page has it listed at $29.99, which I think is price for this kind of software. So I think they're going to hit their target audience, being mostly kids, and I think a fair amount of adults will be interested in this too, myself included.
I think I believe it's also 8 players as well, or up to 8 players.
It is.
Yep.
That's
wild.
Wow. Yeah. It's so pretty cool. I mean, I'll be the first to say I'm not much of a tinkerer. I'm that person who will play a bunch of really cool Super Mario Maker levels, but I won't make that many, because I very quickly learned that making a good one takes more time than I have. So I don't know if I'm the audience for this, but just watching the trailer, I'm so into what they're doing with this. And I love that they're making game development approachable in a visual format for kids and of course, adults who want to get into this as well. So Yeah.
I think where I'm interested is to see kind of both sides, both extremes of the spectrum. Like, I want to see what creative young people do with this, but I also want to see what folks like our friend MVG here, who doesn't need this tool, can do with it. Like, how versatile is it for someone who knows what they're doing and doesn't need like a beginner level tool? And how accessible is it for someone who is just starting out?
Right.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I see this as like the stepping stone to, like, you know, you do this first and then you get good experience in building games, and then you move over to something like GameMaker or, you know, Unity or Unreal or something like that. So I'm pretty excited about this. I hope Nintendo continues to support this. I hope this is not a one and done thing where they release it and then they don't support it. You know, I really do hope that there's a big community that gets behind it, which I think there will be. I think we'll see some really awesome creations that come out of this. And hopefully Nintendo does stick with it, you know, for more than, you know, a year or something like that. They keep constantly updated. And part of me thinks the $29.99 cost of entry is cheap, you know, for that reason, because I think maybe they'll add on extras that you pay for later on. But, you know, we'll see what happens there, I guess.
I've seen quite a few interesting comments from chat. I've missed some of the names, so I apologize for that. But one mentioned that this does seem like a simpler version of Dreams, which, yeah, I think. But Dreams also, like, there's some amazing stuff there, but it also didn't really stay in the mind share that much. And I think that's always been the problem with Media Molecule games for me, is they've always felt really complex. Like, you can do some amazing things, but God help you figuring that out if you don't know what to do. At least it was for my case. The other thing mentioned is a lot of people hoping that Super Mario Maker 2 will get patched with mouse support, since this game has it.
That would be nice.
Really cool. And then just one thing in here that just warms my heart, from Becca's Live, where they said, my son was like jumping up and down excited that he gets to take lessons from Nintendo. And that's the cool things you want to see. Like, to have young kids really excited to actually learn about how to make these type of games. So it's just cool.
I think, Derek, you might have been referencing Ninkobra's statement that this seems simpler than stuff like RPG Maker or Dreams, which I agree. And also, MVG, I think Octopuppet in our live audience chat agrees with you about wanting this to be a long-term thing for Nintendo, because they already want the blocky default character guy in Smash. We're already getting Smash character requests.
Campaign for Labo Man.
Right. Yeah. So now, so we got Labo Man, default block character guy, and Ring Fit Trainer as the late gen Nintendo characters who still aren't in Smash. But all right. Well, I think we've pretty much wrapped up this discussion. Before we move on, though, we do have a super chat from Style Boys, who donates $5 Canadian, saying, shout out to MVG. Always hear you from Spawncast, and everyone have good vibes. Thank you very much, Style Boys, and we hope you have good vibes in your day as well. All right, let's go ahead.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Yes, thank you. All right, let's move on to our next news story, which also has to do with Nintendo in a way. Nintendo creativity. There is a Lego concept of Samus's gunship that has now officially made it into Lego's in-review phase, which means that this could possibly become an official product someday. Doesn't mean it will, but it has at least made it to their in-review phase. And, you know, with Lego Mario and Lego Luigi being things, and obviously this is Nintendo, but also Lego Sonic, maybe this will be the latest in the deluge of video game-related Lego projects to make it into an official product. But whether I don't know if it will or not, but it looks awesome. This looks so cool.
It really does. I'm looking at it on my phone right now, but it is a really cool kit. I would love, this is precisely the kind of thing I want to see when I think of Nintendo and Lego partnering up. I'm really not a fan of the Super Mario Lego stuff that's out now. I think the figure is pretty disappointing. The tech in it is kind of neat, but I don't really, you know, I want, we've said this a million times. I want Peach's Castle. I want something even as simple as like a Lon Lon Ranch thing. If we're going with Zelda, Samus's gunship fits perfectly with the idea of what I'd love to see from these. That being said, I'm going to be the downer here and say that just like all those other Lego Zelda sets that we've seen over the years, I think that this will get reviewed and ultimately will likely not go anywhere. But if we ever do get Beyond Mario, this is right. precisely what I hope for.
So I was kind of thinking the same thing. Go ahead, Derek.
I'm popping something into our green room here. I was just looking up like what it takes to do the whole review process and whatnot. I actually found the 57 product ideas that qualify for the first 2021 Lego Ideas Review. This came out May 3rd. And it's 57 of their submissions have reached the 10,000 supporter milestone and therefore qualify for the review. It's basically just doing that, but it has a list, and it's not just Metroid that's in this list.
Yeah. I've seen it now. Yeah.
Hyrule Castle. Mm-hmm. There's Metroid. I think there's Animal Crossing. Among Us is in this. There's all kinds of properties in here that kind of would work. And it makes me wonder, like, how likely is this? I'm not sure. Likely it is, but because there's three separate Nintendo things, and I know Lego has a partnership with Nintendo, but will it actually happen?
There's also an Animal Crossing New Horizons idea here. All of these look really cool, but yeah, I mean, look, if we can't even get a Lego Zelda set yet, Metroid is way further down the list for Nintendo, I would imagine, in terms of marketability. So I agree with both of you, Steve and Derek. I don't really expect this to become reality, but God, I sure would like it to. The fins that pop up on the back of Samus's gunship, what a cool touch.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I love the design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I mean, I know this is, I'm putting my conspiracy theory hat on for a minute, but do you think maybe they're gauging interest, you know, to see any potential Metroid games that come out on the Switch? This is a way to see how much interest there really is in Metroid in 2021.
I can't imagine they would use Lego as a vector to determine that, right? I mean, that maybe tells one small piece of the story, but
yeah.
I don't know if it tells enough of the whole picture for them to be able to use that as a, at least I hope it doesn't. I hope Nintendo isn't basing, you know, Metroid's viability in the West or viability as an IP period on how, you know, on Lego idea interest, right?
Though, if I can borrow said tinfoil hat for a moment, it would make a great vector for determining what the appetite for other Metroid merchandise is outside of games.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, if people are willing to buy a Metroid Lego set, what else would they buy? And I could definitely see that point of view as being something that Nintendo would have interest in. They've said repeatedly that they're looking for ways to extend their IP to other mediums. And I think that Metroid, for the love that is out there for it, is woefully underrepresented. Like, you don't see, I can go to Hot Topic, for instance, loathe though I may be to go there, and I can find Mario shirts, I can find Legend of Zelda shirts. You do not find, like, in those typical places where you'll see like retro video game merchandise, Metroid is not really present on those shelves. So
yeah, right.
It would be cool to see them release. I would buy a Samus Aran shirt right now if they'd make one. So, you know, if they use Lego as a means to gauge that interest, I would definitely put my money where my mouth is and pony up.
Yeah, same. I mean, obviously all of us here are Nintendo enthusiasts. We all want to see Metroid. That doesn't necessarily tell the overall story in terms of, you know, how successful it is as a franchise, but I know all of us here are just, you know, waiting with bated breath for whatever next Metroid project they announce next. I love Skull Kid Tiger's suggestion here in the live audience chat. Live action Metroid done by the Mandalorian team. That could be interesting.
Ooh.
Yeah, right. And of course, Eddie B comes in with Metroid animation done by the Netflix Castlevania team. I'd be pretty much fine with any franchise being done as an anime by the Castlevania team. They've more than proven themselves.
They still have plenty of other Castlevanias to adapt. Let them, they're fine.
Right, exactly, yeah, right. Okay.
I was just looking at the review phase. I finally found something that kind of goes through it. Basically, it just comes down to the review phase is literally that. They look at it, see if any reasons it might be rejected. You know, for example, There was a My Little Pony one put up for it, but it was rejected because it was owned by a rival toy manufacturer. Apparently, Legend of Zelda was rejected in the past because you needed to create too many original molds. But they didn't rule out other projects based on the franchise. So there's a variety of things that could happen here. And it really just comes down to, all right, we're going to take a look at this, see how the legal team goes, and go from there.
Right. Cool. Well, crossing our fingers, not expecting anything, but crossing our fingers. And thank you, by the way, to Evernight Studio for posting this story in our Discord. But as epic as it would be if this Samus Lego set ever did become a reality, we have another epic news story to talk about. Is, of course, the Apple versus Epic court case is back already. Let's get that story up on screen. And as part of this ongoing litigation, Epic revealed a list of scrapped Fortnite collaborations. And I'm just going to tell you guys right now, it is wild. I'm just going to go ahead and read this list here and let the pieces fall where they may. These are all scrapped. J Balvin, Ariana Grande, Lady Gaga, The Rock, LeBron James, Kill Bill, The Hunger Games, Naruto, and Metroid Prime. Find the one that doesn't belong. I don't think it's even possible. What a weird list of not just IPs or franchises, but obviously entertainers and people like from all different sides of entertainment. It's just such a weird list.
I mean, I think that's what they're going for, really. They just want to bring everyone into this, you know, and I think that's how you do it. You know, you get your big celebrities, you get your movie stars, you get your big musicians, you get video games, you just bring everything into it. And all of a sudden people hear this name Fortnite because, you know, Lady Gaga is in the game and people want to play it. I mean, I think it's pretty standard stuff. And if you've got the money to throw around to get those people, get those licenses in the game, as Epic obviously does, then I think, you know, ultimately, I think it does make sense from a business perspective from them. But you're right, Ash, when you just look at that list, you know, one at a time, it just looks very odd, you know, but I can see why they've done it.
I'm allergic to Lady Gaga in my video games, apparently.
Hey, Ariana Grande has much bigger standards than Fortnite. She's already been in Final Fantasy, so.
Good point. Yeah, she's part of what, Brave Exvius or something?
I think Brave Exvius.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, so Fortnite just continues to bring all these wildly different franchises from different arms of entertainment together, and with its weird signature art style. I don't know. I don't play Fortnite. This doesn't mean a whole lot to me, but I did appreciate the weirdness of this story, of seeing all these things together in a list.
Honestly, the most surreal to me would be Naruto, just because it's so different from
you're telling me I could have been Naruto running in Fortnite this whole time.
I feel like that's the only reason they wanted Naruto in Fortnite, because of the run. I mean, I could be wrong.
Yeah. But then I'm just imagining Naruto holding a gun running around. Of course, the same thing happened with Ryu and Chun-Li, so whatever.
Right.
I mean, it is difficult to turn down that Fortnite money. I mean, I'm not going to lie. If they came to me and said, hey, Steve, we'll give you $11 and a Big Mac if you let us put you in Fortnite, I'd be like, game on.
Right? Sure.
Yeah. Represent me however you want.
I mean, $11 and a Big Mac?
Just a Big Mac.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
Careful what you wish for, Steve. When you guys blow up, you know, in a couple of years, Tim Sweeney's going to come out after you with a contract. You said this.
You said this live on the air. I'm going to be like, one.
It would, to pull another quote from today, from some of the email between Sony and Epic, it would break up friendships to not have Steve in this. Yes, that is a real quote. They talked to Sony. They tried to guilt trip Sony by saying it would break up kids' friendships to not have crossplay on PlayStation. That's how much Fortnite means to these kids.
If kids' friendships are entirely predicated on what video game platforms they can play together on, we're screwed as a society, right? I mean, that's really, really not a good sign.
Hold on. You are literally describing the 80s and 90s right now. That happened.
Console wars, that's true. Yeah, yeah, I guess.
Do you have a Genesis? I hate you.
I had Mortal Kombat on the SNES that didn't have the blood, you know, and I was always so salty
blood
about
on the
it.
Playground.
My best friend had the Genesis version with the blood, you know, so it's like, man.
I was literally talking about this on Monday's episode. I'm same boat. I was on the SNES, and my friends that had the Genesis were like, nerd.
Yep. but then we got NBA Jam, and that was a better version. I was happy.
That's true. Yeah. Now we got Mortal Kombat 2, which was objectively superior.
It was pretty good.
That's for sure.
I never got jealous. Mine was more. I was more like, so sleepover.
Oh yeah, no, right. I never engaged in that stuff myself. But I definitely. I mean, you heard it everywhere.
Oh god, yeah,
everywhere. I remember just thinking like, man, I got to save up and get the Genesis too, so I can be on whatever side at whatever time. I'm like, yeah, Sonic's great.
I definitely started off as a Nintendo kid, but like you guys, I was never jealous of my Genesis owning friends. I mean, I certainly experienced the really hardcore console wars in the playgrounds. I mean, it got really intense, but yeah, for my Genesis owning friends, I'd just be like, hey, can I come over and play? And then I think when I did and I first played Sonic 1, I was like, okay, I want a Genesis now too. And thankfully I was very lucky and privileged to be able to eventually have both as a kid. So,
yeah, but I certainly wasn't.
Not have to choose. Yeah.
Toonjay in the chat looking to start a fight saying SNES Aladdin was better than Genesis. Nope.
Oh, man. Starting.
SNES Aladdin is better than the Genesis. It's done by Shinji Mikami. Come on.
He has a sword and it's
yeah.
I don't know. More interesting. Man. I think it has a better lava escape sequence.
This is the hill. This is the hill for me.
It's Aladdin. I've always said to come back to Aladdin because that is one of the ones that is most clearly so different between versions.
Yeah, that's tough because I generally will prefer SNES ports of SNES and Genesis games, but Aladdin, I think I got to take the Genesis side. But Lion King, SNES all the way, baby. So
I beat Genesis Lion King because that's all I had. So that was something. Although I do love how it's just Aladdin is so set up for the thing where it's the literal virgin Genesis Aladdin versus the chat SNES Aladdin.
Of course.
Whatever.
Well, bringing things. Oh, sorry. Were you going to say something, Steve?
Oh, I was just going to say, I feel privileged to have never played either of these in this discussion. I'm just like, you guys keep fighting. I'm just going to watch the world burn over here.
Oh man, it's definitely one of the flashpoints for the SNES versus Genesis debates back in the day. Mm-hmm. Bringing things back to Fortnite really quick. Classy Mudkip has a very important, prescient question in the live audience chat asking, will Ash play Fortnite if they add Mega Man? LOL. You know what? You don't even have to LOL about that. I am saying I'm putting my foot down right now. I'm saying it for everyone to hear. If they do add Mega Man to Fortnite, I will stream Fortnite and suck at it, but I will do it. I will get the Mega Man stuff and I will stream Fortnite for you all. So there it is. I've said it. You can quote me on that. Capcom, it's in your court now. Get Mega Man in there and I will stream some Fortnite. So there you
go. All right, Tim Sweeney, break out those tens, man.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's a perfect time to go ahead and move on to our next news story. And this was posted in our server by Cloud and Collected, and that is that Riot is going to start recording Valorant voice chat to combat toxicity and root out problematic players online. And I know there are a lot of high emotions about this on both sides. Obviously, you know, we're Good Vibes Gaming. We're generally going to come down on the side of combating toxicity in any and every way possible. So I am for this, but I can see the concerns. Privacy-wise, of course, and, you know, but at the same time, I think those are far outweighed by the very important mission of combating toxic online chat and rooting out shitty players.
This is maybe a silly question, and I don't really know much about, you know, online chat features in like Xbox Live and PSN and stuff, but how would this be any different than that? Like, you know, if you get on your headset on your Xbox, I'm assuming all that information is just recorded, right? Well, it's not recorded, but it's sent over the wire to their servers, which means they can then audit that information later on if they should choose and then add bans and stuff like that. So how would this be any different than that? I feel like this would just be the same thing. And look, I'm all for it if that's what this is at the end of the day.
I think it's maybe the signaling, the open signaling of the intention, right? Because I agree with you. At its root, what would really be different about this? But I guess it's the fact that they are shouting from the rooftops, hey, you have the chance, you have the option to opt into this or not, but from now on, we're going to be recording voice chat for the purpose of moderating toxic chat online. And it says here on the PC Gamer news article that players can either opt in to Riot's new moderation rules or stop using voice chat altogether. So I guess it's just the way it's being presented in terms of kind of like an officially messaged capacity.
Which I think is fine as well. I mean, you know, I don't play Valorant and I am not aware of, you know, how toxic the voice chat can be. But I have seen some tweets from some, you know, female streamers and basically, you know, showing receipts as well. So look, you know, this is a good thing, you know, for the community in overall. I think it's something that sounds like it's kind of overdue as well. So, you know, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think, you know, as MVG stated, they're likely gathering that stuff anyway, so it's whatever. And this comes straight from according to the Twitter profile, the executive decider of things on Valorant, Anna Donlan on Twitter, saying there is a major problem in competitive gaming culture right now when it comes to voice comms. If you don't know that, then you likely haven't suffered the type of abuse in-game that many people suffer, or you just don't care. I read and listen to the behaviors people report. I hear it myself in games. Stop telling me to just mute. How about the abusers just mute themselves? This is a meaningful step, one that we all need to take. So I think that kind of cuts to the heart of the matter is like, hey, you had this privilege for how long? You messed up.
My feeling on this is largely the same as MVG's. We as a community, not individually, have shown our whole ass in terms of just acting inappropriately in games for far too long. And if you don't like it, well, sorry, but you know, it's the same thing I say to my kids. You get so many chances and then eventually you lose a privilege. And this is exactly what's happening here. You know, folks are having to police it this way because of the behavior that's occurring. It's not like they just go, we're going to start doing this. Everything's been fine up till this point and everyone's good boys and girls, but we're going to start recording now just in case y'all decide to start dropping the N-word all day, every day. It's,
I mean, when I was in college, this was a thing. Everybody talked about Xbox Live and the, you know, it was always attributed to the racist 12-year-olds, but it was a thing.
Those racist 12-year-olds when we were in college are now racist 30-year-olds. So, you know what? I hate to say it, but a lot of those folks didn't change. They didn't just go, you know what? I've outgrown this. No, they bought an Xbox Series X, and they're still doing it right now.
And I mean, look, if your toxic ass and your toxic ass friends want to get on into a private room and be toxic to each other, fine. I'm cool with that. Go, you know, be jackasses to each other. That's fine. But I don't think it should ever be a privilege that you can just get on and create a toxic environment for people who want nothing to do with that.
I'll be the first to admit when Nick and I are playing games together, and it's just the two of us, like the minute Xbox Live chat goes on, I'm like, sup, bitch. Like, that is the way I greet him every single time, and he reciprocates. But I would never just jump into like a group chat with people I don't know and do that. Like, I mean, could you imagine if I opened TNT by just saying sup, bitch?
I don't think there would be a TNT anymore.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we might be in a little trouble.
So. Yeah, that would just be a little bit problematic. And the thing is, you know, everyone deserves to be able to get on and play their game of choice and have a non-toxic experience, a safe space, just to be themselves, whoever that is. And so ultimately, you know, while I do get privacy concerns or that end of it, I do think ultimately it is a good thing for developers and platform holders to be doing everything they can to stamp out toxicity online.
I think they have to as well. I mean, you know, you're going to lose your community, you know, you're going to lose your streamers if you don't do anything about this. Because I think, you know, again, from what I've seen and what I've heard, you know, it's long overdue, this thing. So they have to act on this, and I think they are doing the right thing.
I mean, speaking of streamers, it only helps them out because you're trying to stream this game, you have voice chat on, and all of a sudden you have these just stream of N-words are like, well, I'm getting demonetized.
Yeah.
So
and really, you know, it is so easy. We've said this before on the show. It's as easy as don't be a dick. Don't be a racist asshole.
That's hard, Ash. It's,
apparently so. Apparently it
that
is.
That takes effort. I don't want to put in effort.
Yeah, right. That's hard. It reminds me of Scott Pilgrim. you're right. But, well, hopefully this does have a net positive effect and it does actually help kind of start minimizing toxic voice chat in Valorant, and maybe we'll see this logic applied to other games as well in the future. But I think we've said about all we can on that subject. But before we move on to the next news story, we have a donation from a very special patron, Rosa Bowling, a.k.a. Steve's mom, with a $4.99 donation saying, "Great show, guys. Steve, broadcasting from Washington State agrees with you. Smiley face." Thank you so much.
Are you ready? Hi, Mom.
Oh, I was like, wait.
I knew it was
supposed to be ready for it.
it's okay. You know, broadcasting from here is okay. The internet's a lot slower and the camera is a lot worse. But, you know, I'm making do. It's nice to see my family. Thank you for the support, Mom. I always appreciate your help, you know, with making sure that we keep the lights on. I guess these are your lights. So thanks for keeping these lights on for me.
Nice. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on to our next news story. Actually, it's a pair of news stories, which are kind of a blizzard of bad news for Blizzard. Let's get that up on screen.
Well, that was well done.
Thank you very much. Blizzard's latest data show that, unfortunately, their monthly active users have dropped by almost a third over the past 3 years. I believe it's 29% to be exact. Yeah, 29% over the last 3 years. This comes from Video Games Chronicle. Their active users have declined from 38 million to 27 million. So obviously they're still doing fine. They still have 27 million monthly active users. But that is a pretty hefty drop. And one can't help but wonder why that might be.
I mean, as noted in this article, there's been two of its three co-founders have left recently. And more recently, you know, Overwatch's director Jeff Kaplan left the company. So
all true.
Yeah, not too great.
Yeah.
And apparently Diablo 4 and Overwatch 2 will not launch until at least 2022. And I think it's mostly WoW that's keeping them the most active. And even then, I hear more and more from WoW players that they've just sort of moved on to Final Fantasy 14 because it's just
really
better.
Well, and on top of that, there was the whole Warcraft 3 Reforged thing a couple of years ago that just it came out, and I don't play Warcraft, so I can't give you a laundry list of reasons why it pissed off Warcraft fans, but I know it was not received well at all, and people highly prefer the original Warcraft 3.
And there is also, if we're talking about the last 3 years, there's Diablo Immortal, which was not received very well.
Right.
By folks at BlizzCon. And then you had the Blitzchung thing. Like, they've had a string of bad press over the last few years. Yeah. And that is definitely affecting them.
I was going to say the same thing. I mean, and what was the last game that Blizzard actually released? I mean, it's been a while since their last release, right? I mean,
yep.
So, I guess the Shadowlands expansion for WoW, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that would be it. Yeah, look, I think it's just a perfect storm of everything that you guys have said, you know, the departures, Jeff Kaplan leaving the company. I mean, that's a pretty big deal, right?
Yeah.
You know, Overwatch 2, the talk about that when, you know, there's no idea when that game's going to come. Diablo 4 is not coming this year, maybe next year. You're right, the Blitzchung stuff, just everything I think is just this perfect storm of bad news for Blizzard, and it's resulted in people just, you know, falling off and not really playing the games as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other interesting thing is, you know, I was talking with my dad today. We don't get to talk a lot specifically about gaming, but he was the reason I got into PC gaming, and the main game that we played together was Diablo 2. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned to him offhandedly today, I was like, Diablo 2's getting remade, coming out, you know, in the next, I imagine in the next 6 to 8 months or something. And he was like, what? He didn't even know. And he still plays a lot of PC games to this day. You know, so Blizzard hasn't really been super effectively marketing the stuff that they are working on. Like, my dad had no idea that Diablo 4 was in the works. He had no idea that right. Diablo 2 is getting a remake or that it's already had a beta test. You know, so those are things you'd think Blizzard would want those folks that were playing Diablo 2 way back when to know. Because I know personally, the Diablo 2 remake is probably the most exciting thing for me that they're working on. That is the game that I desperately want to get my hands on. It is the most hyped I've been for anything they've done in years. And just to think that there's so many people out there that probably don't know it exists. A ton of people that would likely buy it that played it in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of problems they have right now.
And I think, unfortunately, you and I, Steve, even though we love Diablo 2 and we want to see that remake, and I think, you know, you guys do as well, we're not the majority, you know. I think what most people want to see is like Overwatch 2, you know, and stuff like that. And unfortunately, they can't commit to when we'll see those games. And you know, and I think with Jeff Kaplan leaving, it really just put a sour taste in people's mouths about, well, what is the status of Overwatch 2? When is the game coming out? We've seen nothing about it. We've heard nothing about it. So, you know, I think there's a lot of people that are just feeling a little nervous about where Blizzard is right now and what the future holds. And look, you know, you can't talk about Blizzard without talking about Activision as well. And we obviously know, you know, how they do business on a day-to-day basis and some of the things that they do as well. So it's just, it's not great for them. And look, maybe, you know, they'll come good here towards, you know, the latter half of this year, but I think they've definitely got some work ahead of them, you know, to get that market share back.
Blizzard is, right. I mean, not Blizzard, but Overwatch was such a weird game for me because the trailers, the stuff surrounding it, talking about each of the characters, seemed like such a big story focused game. And then you play it and there's none of that in there.
None of the lore is actually in there. It's just
deathmatches where none of the, like, any character can be on any person's side. And it's like, why? It's like, there's nothing like really connective tissue. And apparently Overwatch 2 will have a story mode this time around, but I think that was a major missed opportunity. And then it just became the loot box game. It was the one that everybody pointed to when it came to loot boxes, and it is absolutely the poster child for that, just because it was so popular, and boy, getting everything was a pain in the butt if you running everything, all that stuff. So
I apologize in advance, but Steve, to go back to something you said, if only Blizzard's marketing was as super effective as Blizzard the Attack is against flying types, grass types, dragon types. I had to. You said super effective. I thought Pokemon. I had to. we do have a really quick kind of side story about Blizzard here, too. And by the way, these are both posted in our server by Fangs. But that is that Blizzard has also had to make some moves to block Fox's new Diablo trademark. That is Fox, the TV network, which they intend for use on glassware, dinnerware, and pet food relating to its new animated series, Housebroken, which I guess is debuting later this month. I don't know anything about that series or whatever, but the fact that Blizzard has had to make this maneuver to try to block that trademark is kind of unfortunate on top of the other bad news they're dealing with right now.
Yeah, I was going to say that this sounds bad, but it's actually really standard in the American legal system. Mm-hmm. If you have, unfortunately, the way our trademark system works is that it favors litigiousness, right? Like you, and it's expected that anytime someone uses your mark, whether it's in for the same purpose as you or not, it's kind of to create a precedent of defending it so that when it truly needs to be defended, it's an easier decision for the judge. Like you show, like, yeah, every time someone uses Diablo, we go to court with it, you know? And it sucks that you have to have that legal case precedent for something as dumb as this, but I would say that this is one that's squarely not really on Blizzard, because you see Nintendo do this, you see Sony do this, you know, every major player in the games industry has to do this kind of stuff. Apple does this all the time. They're notorious for it. And it's just, you know, this is kind of a symptom of a broken legal system that desperately needs fixing, but that is a politics related show.
Right, I know. Yeah, no, for all that you can lay the blame at Blizzard's feet for, I don't think this is one of them. This is just, you know, them kind of making the move that they, as you said, Steve, kind of need to anyway, given our legal system here. But it's just, it's funny how it has to do with a Fox animated show and pet food and dinnerware. Like, what the hell? But
I mean, that's a really funny thing. I was looking into this because I've not heard of this show, and it's basically an animated series in the same time slot as what you'd see Simpsons, Bob's Burgers, Family Guy.
That's kind of the vibe I got.
And yet they want to have the names on glassware, dinnerware, toothbrushes, cookie jars, lunchboxes, and pet bowls make sense, because it's about a therapy dog helping other animals. It's about a therapist, and they want to advertise it on lunchboxes. What? Yeah, that'll make kids into it.
right? Well, I'm glad we're talking about something weird and wacky, because that serves as a perfect segue into our next news story, which is also weird and wacky. So let's get that up on screen. And this was posted in our news server by Jess, and that is that the mobile game Sonic Dash 2 Sonic Boom has gotten its first major update, including a new character, in 6 years. And this also comes 3 years after the end of Sonic Boom the show, and that is that they added Vector the Crocodile and gave him a new character model, which... find the computer room, I guess. I don't know what else to say about this.
Vector did show up in Sonic Boom in this character model. He had like a TV show.
Right. No, I remember that. But like they made, I guess, a new one for the game. And it's just weird that it's coming 6 years after the last game.
I feel like this is Sega's response to the Mario Party update. That, you know.
Yeah.
Right. Or maybe
like, you want to see a real dead game.
Yeah. Well, maybe this is the Sonic 30th anniversary announcement we didn't know we were waiting for. Maybe this is it. We got Sonic the card game. We got Vector in Sonic Dash 2, Sonic Boom. That's it. Happy 30th birthday, Sonic. That's
I mean, to be fair, this is not a difficult model to make. You stick a leather jacket on him, and he doesn't even have wrists by this by the look of this one thing. It's just gloves coming out of his wristbands. So
yeah. Yeah, the weird part of the story is not that Vector is in it. It's that he's in it. Or that he was added to it so long after the fact. And after the show itself ended, which I think we can all agree the show was by far the best part of the whole Sonic Boom venture that Sega took.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's an easy win.
Yeah, easy win. Shame, too, just because obviously everything else Sonic Boom related wasn't great. But that show wasn't just good compared to the disastrous almost everything else. It was just good on its own. But I think it kind of got overshadowed by, you know, Rise of Lyric and all of its problems and you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, it was also screwed around with its time slot by Cartoon Network. So, you know, that's, you know, how that goes.
Right. Exactly. All right. Well, not too much to say about that. Just something kind of fun and weird to chat about for a little bit. But yeah, let's go ahead and speed right along to our next news story.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, right. This is unfortunate. So Detective Pikachu movie lead Justice Smith, who played the main character in the movie, has suggested in an interview with Inverse that, quote unquote, we have to just kind of bury our hopes for a sequel. Of course, confirmed either way, there may still yet be a sequel, but at least according to him, it sounds as though that might not be happening. Maybe negotiations, there's some corporate red tape going on. But yeah, if you were holding out hope for Detective Pikachu 2, maybe curb that hope a little bit.
Well, for full context, because I did look into this, like, see if it was misinterpreted or whatnot, because Detective Pikachu 2 kind of was announced. I'm like, what's going on here? And they said in this interview with Inverse, they said, speaking of Detective Pikachu, it's been a year since you were last asked about the possibility of Detective Pikachu 2. Do you think it's still going to happen? And would you still be willing to participate? And he responds, I would love to participate in Detective Pikachu 2. I don't know if it's going to happen. I think we just have to have to bury our hopes. I don't think it's going to happen. I really hope so, though. Honestly, I'm such a huge fan. Who knows? I hope so. So, right. It just seems like he hasn't heard any word, and it's kind of funny that Sonic 2 just rushed through the whole pandemic thing, but apparently Detective Pikachu kind of got stalled.
I mean, this sounds less to me like a confirmation that there's not a sequel at all, and more of a confirmation that he isn't.
That's possible that they just aren't tapping him for it. Yeah, I mean. There's certainly no for sure conclusions to be drawn either way about this. Either it's not happening yet, or it is, and he doesn't know about it. I mean, of course, chances are he's under, you know.
I'd hope he'd be under contract, but.
Hold on, I have to read this for two reasons. One is the username, which I'm not going to read right away, but the comment is just, who cares? Sonic movie is better anyway. Hard agree. But the user's name is also a goddamn noodle. Which, bravo.
I love it. Yeah.
You have encapsulated the entire internet in one username.
Right. Well, my Nintendo news story this is sourced from does obviously point out that the movie made about $433 million worldwide. So obviously it was a success. But as we've talked about on previous episodes, it also cost a lot more to make than Sonic. And so Sonic's overhead was much lower. And Yeah, there are also probably a lot more, I would say there's probably a lot more corporate red tape to get through with the Pokemon sequel, because with the Pokemon company, Nintendo, you know, I feel like it's maybe a little bit more direct with getting a Sonic sequel.
Nintendo Direct.
No, that actually wasn't on purpose. I can't
say. You're going to fuel speculation with a play like that.
Someone's going to clip it.
Right. Yeah. Don't obviously take this as confirmation either way, but it does seem as though there's a big old question mark right now in relation to the Detective Pikachu movie sequel, when and if it does release.
The thing is that Detective Pikachu, at least in the movie version, was kind of a complete story, you know?
That's true. Like, they do leave it open for a sequel, but it doesn't need one at all. True. It doesn't feel incomplete without one, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think? Did you see the movie MVG?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I really enjoyed it when it came out. I do wonder though if it needs a sequel, but like, you know, you could argue that the movie kind of just stands alone and it doesn't need one, but hopefully we'll get to see the sequel. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, I had a good time with it. I wouldn't mind seeing another movie in that universe, but I'm certainly looking forward to Sonic.
And I like Sonic better, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If we get another Pokemon movie, it's probably not going to be Detective Pikachu related, maybe something else, maybe closer to the mainline games. Who knows? Maybe they'll be like, well, Pokemon Snap is doing really well. Let's do a picture-taking thing. That way we don't have to worry about the battle mechanics and have that awkward conversation.
I don't know if a Pokemon Snap movie would be very entertaining. I guess it depends on the angle they take with it.
Ah, there you go.
Oh wow, damn! I'm on that again. The others were on purpose. This one was not, but I'll take it. I feel like
Ash like switched bodies with Azran or something.
I know, right? Well, speaking of Azran, they are the one who posted our next news story in our Discord, Steve. So perfect segue there. Thank you. And that is that an email, and this of course also comes back to the Epic versus Apple court case, but an email between Phil Spencer and Tim Sweeney reveals that Spencer has not given up on trying to bring xCloud to other consoles. So I don't know if we'll have too much to say about this, but it is nice to know that there is still an effort being made. I know, Steve, we've all talked about how cool it would be to be able to access xCloud on Switch Sunday, and perhaps that's still on the table, although there was an industry analyst a couple of weeks ago that said Nintendo, or at least intimated that Nintendo was categorically not down with that.
Man, what the hell, Nintendo? Why?
Right?
Your console is the perfect Trojan horse for xCloud. I mean, yeah. I understand kind of why, but it also smacks of Sony's hesitance to embrace crossplay. Like, it doesn't, I think that Nintendo falsely believes that xCloud on the Switch would somehow hurt their bottom line. I would posit that it would help it, because the Switch would become even more of a destination for people to play all kinds of games, current gen or, you know, for lack of a better term, Switch stuff.
So. I don't know if it's, you're probably right, Steve, but I also feel like maybe it's about control and what they can control. And maybe they feel like that, you know, with an xCloud client on the Switch, it's kind of pushing you over here, you know, to Microsoft's world. And they don't necessarily want that. They want you stuck inside playing Nintendo Switch games. So I do think maybe there is something that Microsoft does need to do to educate not just Nintendo, but even any partner that they're thinking about bringing on as on xCloud, just to kind of show them, you know, and educate them on how the system works and how it can be beneficial for them and how much money they can potentially make out of putting that system on their hardware. Like, the other thing I think about is, you know, xCloud isn't even on televisions yet, right? Like, I think about the day where Microsoft gets xCloud on every Samsung TV or LG TV that you buy. Mm-hmm. And that would be a pretty big thing if and when that ever happens. But you can probably bet that Microsoft's in talks with those TV manufacturers trying to get their software into televisions as well. So I just really think it's more along the lines of education and you know, making sure that these platform holders don't feel like they're losing any control, you know, over their hardware.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The more I read this, the more, holy crap, Tim Sweeney is something else. Just the eagle in this man.
Yeah.
Because reading this stuff is like, Epic has certain plans for August that will provide an extraordinary opportunity to highlight the value proposition of consoles and PCs in contrast to mobile platforms and to onboard new console users. While I can't share details with any third party at this point, I give you Epic's assurance that our efforts will be positive and supportive of Microsoft, Xbox, and Windows. They also asked, you know, of course, whether the free Xbox Live free multiplayer was coming, and whether Microsoft could time it to support Fortnite Season 14. And basically, Spencer just replied that we'll get there and I want to partner with you. But it wasn't ready to go free multiplayer just yet. It just happened like a month ago, obviously. And Sweeney, in response to him, like, totally understood. I gather there's a lot going on at Microsoft nowadays. Anyway, you'll enjoy the upcoming fireworks show.
God. I mean, to be fair, I would say that a lot of that is a standard like business.
Yeah, it's one CEO talking to another one. I agree with you. I mean, it's standard kind of business talk over here.
Yeah, I do think it comes across.
I just see this, I'm like, man, this guy is just so confident in this legal case. And from what I can tell, I don't know if it's going necessarily in Epic's favor because they are getting dragged.
Yeah, I mean, I see both sides of it. As someone, you know, if you don't know, those of you in the audience, I'm probably our largest connect on working with publishers and getting review codes. I talk like that all the time. like when I email someone about GVG, you know, I'm going to be a bit braggadocious about it because I want them to understand that, one, I think the things we're doing are very exciting. I'm a co-owner of the channel, so I'm very clearly going to come across as extremely positive. Sure, about
and
us.
I mean, you have to sell yourself too, and you have to sell your brand, right? And I get it. You know, Sweeney has Epic and Fortnite. It kind of speaks for itself in some ways, but I mean, you still have to still bring your A game to the table as well. So I can definitely see that from him.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
fair
point. I think the higher you go up the ladder and the higher the stakes become, the more, you know, it scales up, right? Like, you know, my emails to people are typically like, hey, you know, up until we launched season two, I was letting our partners, you know, those folks like at Square Enix, at Nintendo, at Sony, I would let them know like, hey, we're launching on podcast services soon. You guys, it's going to be really exciting. You know, we have a big relaunch coming up. I would definitely say stuff to like hype those folks up. So they'd say like, oh, GVG is going places. GVG is doing big things. Maybe it is a good idea to partner with them now, you know, because obviously that helps us to have that coverage, and it helps them to, you know, get their stuff out in front of a new audience that may not have looked at it before. So I definitely get the whole like selling yourself. And I imagine when you're at like the upper echelons, like Tim Sweeney, that it just gets worse, right?
Like you just terrible at telling myself. I was to see all that. I was like, oh God,
why y'all have me?
I seriously think
I definitely get it from both sides. I'm kind of in the middle. Like I certainly bring confidence to the table, but I'm not good at being braggy and having that braggadocio, as you said, Steve. And I know that being better at that would behoove me. Like it would be a good thing and the channel, because people want to see that projected confidence and maybe that just a little bit of bragginess, but I'm just so bad at that. And it's certainly something that
thanks for watching. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope I didn't bother you. That's me. That's especially like, okay, God,
I don't go that far the other way.
The thing for me is that I think of every email, every communication I have with a potential third party as a job interview, right? Because essentially I'm trying to convince them that working with me is in their best interest. And so, you know, I bring that same energy I would bring to like a job interview for something I really want to land to every interaction, because obviously if I land it, it helps the channel and that's my goal. And you know, like MVG said, a lot of this business, and it's not just in games, in any business, a lot of your job is to convince people of your aptitude, of your skill, so that they are comfortable, you know, basically helping you make money.
Right. Well, very good point. All that said, I'll tell you this. I will fill one cup with Epic's assurances and fill the other with crap, and I'll let you know which one fills up first. It's not going to be the first one. okay, well, I think that's a perfect note to move on to our next news story,
Hold on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, no, we're not. I actually have a couple of super chats to read out. My bad. Sorry about that. Yes, so we have two. One from Skull Kid Tiger with a $5 US donation. A wild Skull Kid Tiger has appeared. Detective Pikachu 2 wouldn't be made unless he flosses more. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, right. Thank you so much for the donation, Skull Kid Tiger. You're in here so often, just dropping donations left and right. We love you so much. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you for your support.
We also have a super chat from Thomas Nerds Out, who says, this court makes as much sense as urinating into a radiator. The outcome pretty much stinks like piss. Yeah, I mean, where's the lie? You're totally right. And as we've said before on this show about this case, whoever wins, we all lose, pretty much. You know, it's not as though the fans and the consumers stand to really gain much from any of this.
We kind of get the roundabout, like, we kind of get good things out of this, but it's like for the worst reasons.
Exactly. And it's certainly money
crossplay.
Right. I mean, and certainly, you know, it's money lining others' pockets. It's not as though we're any of us are seeing a payday from all this. So, but thank you so much, Thomas Nerds Out, for the donation and for your support of the channel. With that said, now we can move on to our final news story, which has to do with a particularly monolithic second-party developer of Nintendo's. the head of Monolith Soft, Tetsuya Takahashi, has said that he wants to make an M-rated game for the Switch. No indications of if he's actually going to get to do that or not, or what sort of direction their next project is going to take. We know they're helping them work on Breath of the Wild 2 right now, but in terms of Monolith's next original title, who knows? Although there are certain segments of Xenoblade 2 that could be argued that get kind of close to an M rating, I guess.
I mean, these guys definitely push the limits sometimes, but he says, as far as the hypothetical game's content is concerned, he said it would be violent and erotic and heavy, something that there's no way we would be allowed to do it.
So
this is mostly wishful thinking.
Probably not going to happen. Yeah.
Man, I would love to see them pair up with Grasshopper and make this game. I think Goichi Suda and these folks, like, they could definitely make this happen. I miss the era of like weird, very stylized, ultra violent games that we saw on the Wii, like Mad World. I want another Mad World. Oh, Mad is what World I'm trying was, to say.
Yeah, I hear you. And Derek, although what you say is true, and I agree with you, the story does go on to say that although Takahashi stated that he didn't believe Nintendo would ever give him the green light when it comes to taking on such a venture for the Switch, the Xenoblade Chronicles director Ko Kojima chimed in to say that he thinks it would be possible. The matter of CERO, as in Computer Entertainment Rating Organization, Japan's rating system, was brought up after that, which prompted Kojima to reply, "We can just go Z with X, which is the Japanese equivalent of what an ESRB M rating would be for a game in the West." He also went in to talk about that the M-rated Switch title that he wants to put out would be almost completely uninhibited from creative limitations, constraints, corporate meddling. Takahashi just ends by saying, completely seriously, though, I would like to do a Z-rated game and just do whatever the hell I feel like doing. Wouldn't we all? I think we all would just like to do whatever the hell we feel like doing.
I want to chime in really quick to mention that this story was from 2018.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. What? I didn't realize that.
I'm sitting here.
I didn't look at this. Why is this all of a sudden here now?
That's so funny. Okay, well, fortunately, that isn't the only Monolith Soft story we have to talk about, though. So clearly, three years on, this hasn't happened yet.
Obviously, we need God more.
Yeah. Thank you for that, voice of God. But we do fortunately have a 2021 news story about Monolith Soft, and that is now that they have grown to 272 members, and over a quarter of them are female developers, which is cool. There's always room for improvement there, I believe, but it's a good start.
That seems higher than average, honestly.
It does, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, comes from NintendoEnthusiast.com. The last count was 261 employees in December, but it has since then jumped to 272 as of April of this year. So we know they've been expanding lately anyway, and it's nice to see that they are doing so with a mind of, you know, recruiting as many female developers as possible.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of folks underestimate the impact that having a diverse team can have the development of a game, because people have different worldviews, different perspectives. And we kind of touched on that earlier with the chat recording Riot story. You know, the key soundbite there being that if you have a problem with this, you probably haven't experienced the type of harassment that other folks have. And I'm not saying that that is, you know, key, like people being harassed is not key to developing a great game. But what it kind of underlines the fact that, you know, coming from a different walk of life gives you a whole different set of experiences that you can bring to the creative process. And that can dramatically improve the quality of a game, in my opinion. I'm happy to see that Monolith Soft is being more progressive in hiring more women, you know, to help round out their staff. And I'm curious to see how that will impact their games going forward.
Yeah, I think it's awesome to see as well. I mean, I'm a big advocate of this stuff, and it looks good. But look, there's still more work to be done. Let's be honest. I mean, a quarter of the workplace, it's great. Like you said, it's a start, but it needs to improve. And look, I'm definitely not throwing anything at Monolith Soft about it, but hopefully they're paying them the appropriate wages and all that as well, which I, you know, I'm sure they are. But
everything I've heard is that Monolith Soft is actually one of the better places to work. They treat their employees pretty well.
That's good. Good to hear.
That seems to be the word on the street. That's kind of what I've heard as well. And by the way, these stories were posted in our server by one of our newcomer patrons to the server, Ghost Wolf Chronicles. And even if one of them was from 2018, it led to a great discussion about how we need something else like Mad World on the Switch. I want to see, like you said, Steve, an HD version of something really cool and M-rated like Mad World would be awesome. So thank you for posting both of those stories in our server, Ghost Wolf Chronicles.
It is, like, looking at this article, it is pretty cool how they've basically doubled their employees from December 2017, starting at 150, basically right after they released Xenoblade Chronicles 2, to being at 272 employees now. So
they've got that Breath of the Wild 2 money now. Clearly, they need.
Xenoblade games are no slouch, that's for sure.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if a lot of this staffing up, though, has to do with the fact that they're dealing with big first party Nintendo stuff now.
But they also have their own, like, they've done that concept art from how long ago, where with a different, completely different style to what we see in Xenoblade Chronicles. I'm so curious what the heck that game is,
if it ever comes to fruition.
Also, thank you to a few people in our live audience chat who are pointing out, I slip at the tongue, Monolith Soft is a first party. They are full by Nintendo, so second party was not the correct term to use there. So thank you, Ninkobra and Brady Power and everyone else who mentioned that. So thank you for that. With that said, God, we've had a long show today, but I do believe we have finally reached the end of the show. Steve, it looks like you have something to say, though. Oh, we got a new one.
Two new more ones. Super chats.
I just saw that. Cool. Well, first one is
you're going to love the first one.
Yeah, here we go. Twilord with a €5 donation saying, wait, Monolith Soft are second party, aren't they? And despite the distance, Retro basically in-house, Shulk is more Nintendo than Kirby or Pikachu. And yes, you're completely right. Slip of the tongue again. So thank you for pointing that out, Twilord. And thank you so much for your donation. We really appreciate it. We also have a $10 donation from Hidden Gem Gamers, who says, I would love to give you money on Patreon to review one of my favorite games. Are you ever going to bring back that tier? I understand not wanting to play a 50-plus hour RPG, but my game is only 6 to 8 hours. So as much as we would love to bring back that tier, unfortunately, we found out very quickly that it just added a kind of a ridiculous amount of work on top of all the stuff that me, Derek, and Steve have to do every day just to keep the channel running, just to keep TNT going. So as much as we love the idea of that tier, it very quickly turned out to be like, whoa, this is a lot of work.
Yeah. The thing that I like to tell people is that when you are working on a game review, take the time that it takes to play the game and then add about 10 or 12 more hours, because you have to have footage. You have to write a script. You have to edit the script. You have to record the voice for the script. Then you have to put footage to it. Then you have to find the right music. And by the time you're done, you've spent 25, 30 hours on an 8-hour game review. It is a lot more work to prep the review than it is to play the game for it in many cases. And that's why we kind of, you know, because we fell to that fallacy. We were like, oh, you know, like small little bite-sized games here and there shouldn't be a big deal. And then we're like, whoa, but we have to make a whole video about that. And that takes a lot of time, and it distracts from our other efforts. And we don't want the channel to suffer for these retro reviews. So we decided the best thing to do was to clear out the backlog of them that people had purchased and then just do away with the tier.
We're still working on clearing. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I've got my own formula when it comes to making videos. It's 1 hour of editing per 1 minute of video. And it usually comes pretty close for me most of the time.
Yeah.
I would say that's pretty close to what I experience as well. ToonJ723 says, you could limit how many people get into the tier if you haven't done that before. We did do that. And it still was just added, even with the limitations we had imposed.
A bit more of a, context there. I went from, I went from, Near Replicant, getting that all set to go for its embargo, completely focusing on that. And then New Pokemon Snap came out 3 days later. Still working on that, getting that review, trying to get that review ready to go before Friday, because that's when Resident Evil 8 comes out and I'm going to be reviewing that. So
yeah,
between those reviews all coming up in a row, taking care of a 6-month-old and TNT, plus our new weekly discussions that we're going to be doing, there's just not a lot of extra time for those type of reviews as much as
right. Not to mention all the other Patreon, perks we have that that obviously take time to actually affect and make sure we deliver everything we promised to everybody. So unfortunately, long story short is while we would love to do that in theory, it just isn't feasible with, our hectic schedules. Steve and I are both working on upcoming reviews for Famicom Detective Club. I still have a review I wanted to do of Balan Wonderworld that's half written that I just need to get back to, that there's just so much to do every day and with the channel and our jobs outside of the channel. So we do appreciate your interest, and we certainly want to do it, and we'll never say no completely. But as for now, it's just too much on top of what we already have to do. But thank you so much for your interest. With that said, I do believe that does bring us to the actual end of the show at last. It's almost 5:45 p.m. Oh, man. Cool. Well, as always, though. Sorry, Derek?
Might be our longest.
Yeah, it might be. But of course, before we actually move to the end of the show, MVG, would you please tell our incredible audience where on the internet they can find you, man?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on, gentlemen. It was a blast to be here. You can find me on Twitter at ModernVintageG. I usually tweet pretty much every day. And on YouTube at ModernVintageGamer. Just search my YouTube channel. You'll find it. I make at least one video a week. Sometimes I'll put in a midweek video as well if there's something interesting to talk about. But other than that, you just search my name. You'll find me. Thanks for having me on, gentlemen.
Awesome. Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being here. In the description.
So. Yes, we'll have links to all of MVG's content in the video description below after the stream is over, of course. And I think there are already a few there now, but we'll make sure that's all complete. But yeah, MVG, thank you so much for being here with us. We'd love to have you back anytime, man. It's been a pleasure.
Yep.
As always, we have to give a huge thank you to all of our patrons at the producer tier and above for helping to make today's news tonight happen, because without your support, it would not be happening, especially this new and improved, glowed up season 2 of TNT that we're doing now. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts for helping to make this show happen, because it couldn't happen without you. But as always, a particularly gargantuan thank you to all of our patrons at the executive producer tier and above. And those wonderful, wonderful folks include Jared Ettinger, Brandon Bovia, Rob Arman X, Etiono Ben, Dan Entwistle, Dennis J, Z Patty, Hyrule Hermit, Sky Blue Flames, Adam O'Sullivan, It's ATM, Octopuppet, Richard Herrera, Michael Phone, Aiko Carroll, The D-Pad, Vesmio, Waffle King, Kitty Kong Fax, Angel Martinez, Vedran Hotik, 112, Macalau, John, Joshua Hunter, Evernight Studio, Benny Yao, Alessia, Azran 127, Kin Rule 09, Jake Pelka, Geller, Joseph Rutkin, Titus Malvolio, Charlie Bird, Joseph Griffin, Lucky Wonderfish, Top Dog 23100, Young Ben Kenobi, Douglas Chomix, Andrew Medeiros, Aurum M, Sakuragi, Rox the Cat, Fizzywig Hoyd, Flaming Highwayman, The Legend of Groose, Eddie B, Kai Ed, West Egg, Master Lynx, Deaneth, Jackson Jordan, Michael McCaw, Matthew Wong, Goron Amber, Straight Lace, Hubie, Wolf X Blake and Moon Macarons, Ascaron 809, Kane, Captain Finlandia, 60 Minutes and 60 Seconds, The Game Orb, Dano the Artist, Ravelox, Synchro Lord, Brainchild, Rosa Pardo Bowling.
Hi, Mom.
Got two Hey Moms in this episode. I love it.
I know.
Kotar Peck, Scuff 196, Skull Kid Tiger, AJB Cool, Blizzica, Jason Uloa, Jaden Buck, Phantom Project, Wheezy Penguin, Darik, Stephen Nelson, and our two newest EPs, Ray Clausen Jr. and Nathan Woodruff. Thank you all so much for your incredible support of the channel, of everything we do here. Of course, if you're curious how you can get involved with GVG and support what we do, including get into our live audience chat that you see right here on our stream, you can head over to patreon.com/GVGaming and check out all the different tiers you can support us at. We just recently revamped and refreshed our whole Patreon with like a new tier, new perks at various tiers. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of stuff going on here at GVG. So check us out over there on Patreon. But even if you can't, even if all you can do is drop a like and a subscribe here on YouTube, we'd love you all the same. Every little bit helps. So thank you so much. And we will see you on Friday for the next episode of Today's News Tonight. Until then, everybody. Good night, and good vibes. Bye.
Bye, everyone.